So here at The Expansive, we are always looking for new podcasts to tune into. And what's been really great to see is that more and more organizations are coming to the party. They are busy creating high quality content. And one podcast that we recently came across was from Investec. And through this podcast, they are really looking at adding more value to the conversation around sustainability. John, what did you think of this pod?
I loved it. You know, I've worked with Investec a few times. I'm a big fan of the brand. And now that what they've got is a award-winning journalist. I think her name's Iman Rapetti, who brings sort of like top thought leaders into the discussions around the challenges and opportunities we have around sustainability. It's no secret that South Africa has had a problem with Eskom for the longest time. While we have incredible weather and incredible sort of sustainability options around us, around wind and solar and so many other things that we could be doing. And I love it that they are actually bringing this together into a pod where we can hear the people that are making those decisions and how South Africa is becoming more sustainable through a collaborative process. So bravo, Investec, really enjoying this fact that you brought this out. And I think they've done already 10 episodes. It's called The Current Podcast with Iman Rapetti. Have you listened to a couple of them, Eric?
Yeah, dude. You know what I always, what I really appreciate about it is that it's not just about awareness, because I think sustainability is a buzzword that we hear all the time. And what I like about the approach to this is that it's not just about the awareness, it's about action. It's about like, what do we actually do to create sustainability? And also, it's not about going alone. It's about the power of collaboration. And I mean, we speak about collaboration on the pod all the time and how important it is for trying to build the future. Like, no one can do that on their own. And so it really is about involving investors and businesses and policymakers and you as the individual in terms of how do we go about creating a more sustainable future. So if you are passionate about our planet, our country, and the potential for a brighter, greener future, then tune into Investec's new podcast, The Current. You'll find tools, resources, and the inspiration you need to be a part of the change. Let's turn today's challenges into tomorrow's opportunities, and let's do that together. Hi, and welcome to The Expansive Podcast, where we talk about all things business, personal growth, and how you can live a more expansive life. My name is Eric, and I'm always joined by my co-pilot and co-host, Mr. John Sane. And actually, it's been a long time since I've done an intro like this. It feels to me like months, really, to be honest. It can't be that long, but it feels like ages since we've had a bit of a chat on the pod. What's happened?
It has been ages because the last time I interviewed Dallas,
yes,
we were chilling somewhere. And the other time we went and we did that same gig together, you didn't bother taking a mic with you. I've been busy. I've been doing this a lot. I've chatted to Dallas. I've been carrying this mic with me everywhere I go in the world.
Champion.
Yes, Eric, you've been letting us down. Nothing new here. Anyway, what's up, brother? Nice to see you again. Nice to be doing this again. I realize how much we miss it. Actually, the banter is always welcome and always gives an uplifting energy. And we have a very exciting pod this week to put together. And also, I think we should be telling our listeners now that the next time you listen to this pod, we are going to be trying a brand new format. And a format that I think will really help you be more expansive in many different ways and make it much more about current news that's happening around the world rather than specific topics only. So we will be integrating the sort of like masterclass sessions, but also going into some of the biggest trending stories and how we can apply ourselves to these stories to keep us expansively making better decisions about the future. So we've been working on this for the last few months. We're really excited about it. And so next week, we're going to be kicking off this new expansive idea.
Yeah. And if you're wondering why, there's two big reasons for it. Number one is to be expansive. It helps to, I think, a big part of the role that we are supposed to play is to help contextualize a lot of what we hear in the media and what we see and how those messages are received. And so hopefully we can help to reframe some of that for you and help, because it can be quite scary, I think, how it's often communicated. So that's number one. And number two is that after 223 episodes together, John and I have said everything that we can say to each other. I've not spoken to anyone as much as I've spoken to John. And I was listening to John's keynote the other day, and I could almost give John's keynote by now because I know what he's going to say next. As he's taking people down the little rabbit hole, I know what's coming next. And so we're also just finding ways of enhancing our own learning and finding ways of bringing new and different and fresh energy to the pod.
So that's great. Thank you for that summary. And then I think also another thing that we can tell people now is that our book is going to be coming out over the next couple months. And we've been writing a book now, which is about 52 pieces of wisdom to be more expansive inside your business. And so the whole book is designed around having something to meditate and percolate on weekly, taking some of the nuggets from the podcast over the last sort of 4 to 5 years, and really breaking them down to try and make them as practical as possible to have something to meditate on and think about for that week. And so that's going to be coming out over the next few months. And we'll be having a couple book launches around South Africa and Dubai. So make sure you stick around and we'll give you those dates as soon as they come up.
I'm so excited for that, man. And I saw you obviously posted a small snippet from the book this morning. And it's been doing really well. It's been doing really well.
I don't know.
It's either that the content in the book is already so good, or people just really like how hot you look on your photo, standing on stage, being all guru. It's a combination, both. Of course. LinkedIn wants both. LinkedIn wants the photo of you plus the content.
It's so funny because Eric and I this morning were reading the transcripts of the book, and I just saw a chapter I really liked. Not a chapter, a paragraph. So I copied it and put it on Instagram, and then I get a ha, 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 ha from Eric. I'm like, this is really good. I need to share it to the audience. Test the audience out. See if they like the work.
Good stuff. Yes, good stuff. Yeah. Do it in public. I like it. Yeah.
I do it in public. Of course. Of course. So some exciting news that's, yeah, go on.
No, I just want to say, it feels like we have so much to catch up on and update the audience on, because there's been so much that's happening from us speaking together to your trips in Zurich. I think let's save us doing some stuff together for once we get into storytelling, because I think there's a nice sort of introduction that I want to do around that as well. But you've just come back from a trip in Zurich. It was a day in and out from Zurich.
Yes. So what happened was I was speaking for Deloitte on the future of work in Zurich, and booked my hotel room to... like you check in at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and then you check out at 11 a.m., right? That's how a normal hotel room works. And so my team booked me a hotel room, and I only arrived at 7 a.m. Because that's when my flight landed. And so then I would go to the hotel, shower, and then my talk was at 9:30. So I arrive at the hotel to check in, and she's like, oh, Mr. Sane, oh, we didn't think you were coming. We gave you a room away.
For what?
I'm like, no. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, whoa, no. I booked it specifically so that I could arrive at 7 and shower so I could go to do my work. Like, I'm here to do a talk. Oh, no, sorry, we're fully booked. I'm like, no. I've paid for it. Oh, no, you haven't told us. So we gave you a room away. I'm like, are you joking with me? Like, I'm going on stage in 2 hours' time. I can't not. Like, what are you talking about? It's like, you know what we can do for you? We can give you the gym keys and you can go shower in the gym.
No ways.
I was like, you know, this is so offside, but okay, cool. I don't have a choice now because, I mean, what am I going to do? I've got to get this done. So I go up to the 7th floor. I get out. And listen to this, bro. The showers are in the gym, like in the gym, no doors. It's one of these showers that are 3 showers next to each other with the towels right next to it, the yoga mats next to it, the boat. Like, it's an open plan shower inside a gym. I've never seen anything like this in my life. So, and then now, guess what? It's 7:30. Guess what everybody's doing? Training. So now I have to go into this gym. There's literally, I'm not joking, 3 ladies doing yoga and 2 cleaning ladies that are cleaning around. And guess what John's doing? Unpacking his suitcases on the floor next to the yoga studio. And then guess what? I start showering because I don't have a choice. Like,
in full view.
I don't have a choice now. I've got to start in full view, bro. Like, Now, look, hats off. I know this about Germany.
Very confident man.
Thank you.
Very confident man. Yeah.
Well, look, you know, the Tantra workshop I did in Costa Rica helped me a lot with nakedness. But if you think about it, the Germans are very comfortable with nakedness. And I guess Switzerland's not too far off. Yeah. And firstly, think about the design of the showers, bro. Like, who's got open plan showers? Like, who has open plan showers? Have you ever seen open plan showers inside a hotel gym? I've never seen that before. And so there I was showering, and then with my rest, my suitcase is wide open with all my clothes. I mean, come on, bro. It's like, and then I thought to myself, the glamour of my job, you know, I flew business class. So firstly, let me tell you, I flew business class. And so it wasn't on Emirates, it was on Swiss Air. Do you know what Swiss Air gave me for my dessert on business class? I mean, those tickets were not cheap. Do you know what they gave me for dessert? An orange and a banana with a bread knife to cut. I looked at this and I laughed to myself. I was like, this is a joke. Like Emirates, they would be turning in their grave if somebody gave you an orange and a banana. Plus, no smile, no apology. Like it was like, yo, here we go. This is your dessert. Thank you very much. Keep moving. I'm in business class, dude. Are you joking with me? Anyway, and then I arrive at my talk and there's like 400 people there and like a totally different world. They had no idea that I'd just come out of a unisex bathroom showering in front of three ladies. And then I go up on stage and I switch off my phone like I do every time I go up on stage. But somehow my laptop was connected to the internet and people start calling me on WhatsApp. So now I'm in the middle of my talk and my WhatsApp phone starts going off and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what else can go wrong here today. Either way, I switched off my phone. The audience had a bit of a lach. It went really well. So, I mean, it went really well. But, and then that night, I got straight back onto the plane and came back to South Africa. So, and then, what an adventure.
Man, the behind the scenes is often very, very interesting when it comes to these little trips. Yeah. And for all the glamour that comes with it, there's a lot of drudgery behind the scenes and lots of showering in front of ladies and in yoga studios.
How mad is that? Thank goodness I'm in shape, bro. Thank goodness I'm in shape. I got my six pack out, so I was all okay. I was like, okay, I'll shower here. I'll show them.
You know, something I always think about is there's sort of two ways to approach this. It's like, so you've gone through this, like you've had this sort of like interesting lead up to the event. And then you could get to the event and you could say to people, like, I've just gone through this. You know, it's been like this crazy mad rush. It's been like this and that. This has gone wrong. This has gone wrong. But I don't know how you think about this. But for me, I'm like, that's not their problem. Like, they've paid me to be here. This is part of the work that I have to deal with to get here. And so I'm going to get up and I'm just going to do my best. Afterwards, I'll tell them about what went wrong and like everything. But before the event and everything is at stake and like they've just, you know, spent all this money, I'm not going to tell them about like my own things that I've had to deal with before stepping on stage. That's for afterwards. What is your thinking about that?
Absolutely. The only person that knew was the organizer because she felt so bad. And she was like, geez, you don't look like you've just showered in a unisex bath. You look fresh. I'm like, yeah, I feel fresh. But I mean, so it's kind of stressful. Yeah. Absolutely. Look, they specifically this event was built around me. And so I can't rock up and like have stories and like nobody cares.
No one cares.
You know, like that's my worst about any service providers is like somebody coming to tell me that, look, your pizza is going to be running late because we're too busy. I'm like, I don't give a shit. That's your problem, not my problem. Like fix it. And so, especially in our work, I don't think it's the client's fault. I mean, it's the client's, especially in this scenario, it wasn't the client's fault. Yeah. The client was also like, totally shocked by the fact that hotel had did that. So, and the hotel brand's a 25-hour hotel. It's a really good brand. In Dubai, it's really good. So weird, man.
Anyway, so listen, I mean, coming off that great story, today's... thanks for that introduction. Today's
pleasure.
Theme for the pod is all about storytelling. And I'm glad that it's actually weird that we've never spoken about this before because it's such a big part of the work that we do. The content that we put out, the talks that we deliver, everything really is about storytelling. And I think it's become, or it continues to be an important skill for where we are going. You know, you always see people talking about the skill of the future and I've seen like every skill being the skill of the future, which is like funny, you know. But yeah, if you're in the public speaking space, the skill of the future is going to be storytelling. If you're in the teamwork space, then the skill of the future is going to be collaboration. So there are many different skills of the future. But I do think that storytelling is really important because it has always been important and it will continue to be important because it's the way that we transfer ideas. And I think that that's the frame, at least, that I'm coming at this from today, which is that in any setting that you are in, what's really important is how you communicate to people. And your ability to communicate is going to either persuade or influence them. It is going to help you share ideas that are in your head. It is going to help you market a product that you have. It is going to help you to deliver a presentation, be that at work or at school. So ultimately, how we create the container for ideas is really important. And I think that's what we are going to try and distill today. And probably both of us are pulling heavily from how do we deliver keynotes. And so I know for me, I use that frame really as a sort of the sole frame of today's session. But I think the context of it is that it can be used in any way where you are trying to be a better communicator.
Great setup. I've broken down storytelling into internal, conversational, and presentation. And I think storytelling starts with the story you tell yourself, the quality of conversations you have, the questions you ask. And I love this line around the fact that music is not the notes, it's the silence between the notes. And I think presentation and storytelling are also the silence pieces until we even get on to being on stage, which is obviously what we do. And the storytelling there has to be masterful, has to be surprising, has to be rhythmic. There's many things you can talk about there, but I want to start off with the sort of the closest story that you are telling is the story you tell yourself. And often we don't have the awareness of the quality of conversation we're having with ourselves about ourselves and about people all internally. And I think it's really important for us to realize when we're judging, when we are having an argument with a fictitious person, when we are creating all the sort of dramatic ideas in our heads without any awareness of it. And I've spoken about this before, but the game of becoming friends with the citizens of your kingdom, identifying these personas inside you that are creating the dramatic stories that you are then integrating into the way you think and then coming out into the world, representing those internal dialogues continuously without even realizing it. It affects your mood. It affects the way you present. It affects the way you conversate. And so I think as far as presentation is concerned and as far as storytelling is concerned, let's start up with the most important story you're telling of the one who you are and how you fit into the world and what you deserve in the world. And those three things are just so important. And I know this because I've worked on them myself. You know, like I'm doing a lot of meditation since doing the Dallas event again. I'm up to about 3 hours a day. And the stories that you become aware of when you still yourself and then start to manipulate into and bring into fruition the stories you should be telling yourself. And that's what meditation gives you. It gives you this opportunity to become objective of the stories. And now that I'm meditating so much, I'm like, oh my God, I'm building such beautiful, exciting stories to look forward to and realize that even being a meditator and not really fully focusing on it for the last sort of 6 months or so, I'd lost track and how much of a difference that sort of internal storytelling makes.
I love that so much, man. I think it's such a great and important place to start the conversation at, because it really is that, you know, we all tell ourselves stories all the time, and a story inherently is malleable. It can be changed. And it's unfortunate that for most of us, our awareness is just at such a low level that when thoughts and stories play in our minds, we either just accept them or we become reactive to them and we act them out instead of approaching them with a bit of curiosity and instead of trying to examine them a bit closer and to really ask, is this a story that was built from a place of optimism and possibility, or is this a story that has kind of been manufactured over the years? Because we've also seen that, and I mean, they've done lots of studies on this where they would like, I think the one study was they had people experience, like in the duration of their day, they would experience like an accident, that walk into an accident that had happened. And then they asked them later on to recall what they saw. And almost in all cases, like their memories were manufactured. You know, there was some parts of it was truth and many other parts were made up. And so what does that become? It just becomes the story that you have told yourself about that event. And so if we don't become a lot more aware of those stories, like you end up in this very weird space where you are totally driven by stories that have been manufactured. How insane is that? To think that that is how we live our lives.
But hang on a second. All stories are manufactured, Eric. Yes, negatively manufactured.
Yeah, true. And I liked what you said about your meditation practice, because what you are doing in that meditation practice is creating stories, new stories.
Rehearsing new futures.
How awesome is that? And again, it's a manufactured story. But what that story allows you to do, like the story becomes destiny.
It's an anchor point into the future.
For sure. Yeah, or into the past, or into the past.
If you're rehearsing it and manufacturing it optimistically, you are. Look, let me. I'm going to plug it. My new book is called Future Memories. Let me tell you why it's called Future Memories.
No, your new book is called
Expansive. My personal book.
Your book. Yeah.
Next year, my book's Future Memories, and the reason is that most of us make decisions based on past memories, not future memories. And so what you're doing is you're solving yesterday's problems and having yesterday's arguments, not developing new possibilities and new connections in the future. And so if you can make your locus of decision-making based on future memories rather than past memories, you are winning like nobody's talking, like nobody's winning. That is the winning mindset. It's not so much growth mindset. It's actually more than growth mindset. It's solidifying and anchoring a story into the future you're looking forward to.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. The most important story that you're going to tell is the story you tell yourself. So that's a great starting point.
So the conversational one is, for me, a favorite one. I mean, we did a very successful, actually, masterclass on networking. And networking was very much about conversations. And, you know, a lot of who you are is based on two things for me. Who you look up to and the quality of your conversations. I can tell a lot about somebody of who they look up to and what they talk about and what questions they ask, or even if they even ask questions. And what's happened when I become quite aware of this is, I don't know, it's very tough because I don't, like some people really look up to people that I do not look up to because I don't think their values are quality enough. I think they've made money, they've been successful, but they're actually quite idiotic. They're like not even like very nice people. They're just, and so that's the first turn off for me. The second one is when you think about storytelling, we often think about storytelling and what you're saying. But I also think storytelling is in the quality of the questions you ask. It explains who you are by the quality of the questions that you ask. And I made a post the other day and it said, you want to see wisdom? Look at the quality of questions. No, look at how much somebody's interested in other people's opinions. That's wisdom. And by you being wise and looking for other people's opinions, it says a lot about you and the stories that you are interested in the world. And I think that's also really important for us to highlight is that, again, when we think about storytelling, we often think about what am I saying to the world, not what am I asking of the world. How am I interested in the world? How am I carving out information in the world that benefits me and I can think about and grow from? And, you know, one of my favorite questions to my Jewish friends and Muslim friends is, tell me about what you're thinking about Israel and Palestine. Like, tell me what you are feeling. And it's so funny because I am empathetic to both. I obviously have my own personal views, but I understand from both point of views the struggle that's going on. Both are unhappy for different reasons, but to be able to ask those questions and my friends being comfortable to answer them says a lot about my quality of judgment, of acceptance, of my story that I'm telling the world. And I think that's also very important for us to conversate around the things you ask is also part of your story.
Well, I mean, it shows interest and you can't be a good storyteller without being really interested in the people around you. One of the key things I think is, and this is where debates go wrong all the time, is when you think of most online debates, it is two parties that are just trying to force their opinion down the other, like, other person's throat. And instead, the much better way of doing it is to really understand and to align with where someone else is. It's only from that vantage point that you can actually get them to change their mind anyway. It's going to be a hard thing to try and get someone to think differently. That's all. It's always going to be hard. The better way to do that is that they don't see you as someone trying to fight them. It's this, like, can we collectively be curious about, you know, where we're trying to end up?
That's a master stroke, Eric. It's what the world needs. It needs more questions, less shouting, more wisdom, less intelligence, more wisdom, more wisdom.
And also, to come back to what you said earlier, everyone has their own story. So you should aim to first try and understand their story before you just try and ram yours down their throat. It never works when you're just coming from a purely antagonistic point of view.
Do you know where that antagonism comes from? Is your internal dialogue of anger. So now when you see the person, all you want to do is offload. And then that shows that your internal dialogue's broken.
Mm. And I think there's this assumption or this belief that they have to be wrong for me to be right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and most of the issues in the world that we're facing today and most of the things that we are dealing with is very gray. You know, there's no clear right or wrong. There's so much that is impacted by culture and history and societal development.
Trauma.
So, yeah. Trauma. It's colored by so many things. And so to think that there's a very binary, clear right or wrong, it's actually a bit foolish. And to be more interrogative and more curious is a much better stance.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, yes, I think those are the two places of storytelling that I thought were important to touch on before we actually get onto the storytelling. And again, it's going to lead into presentation storytelling, which is one of the points I've made here, is be delightfully surprising. And in your storytelling, you have to be surprising for people, because you know what? People have seen everything, watched everything. They've just, everybody's on YouTube, everybody's on TikTok, everybody's on Instagram, everybody's seeing everything, everybody's seeing. And so we've all seen things. How are you keeping your information and your presentation surprising? And I'd like to say that I think talking about storytelling internally and in conversations and with what you ask, not what you say, is surprising. That in itself is an example of good storytelling because it's unexpected, it's delightful, and it's surprising.
I couldn't agree more.
If I say so myself.
Yeah, thank you. No, I couldn't agree
John,
more. Yeah, well
John,
done.
You're delightful.
Well done, John Sonny.
Delightful, John. Yes, and you, John, you're surprising, delightful. Thank you so much. I'm going to leave the podcast now. Eric, you carry on.
So let's go. Let's get into the more grounding stuff then. So
yes,
we recently did a keynote together. So I wanted to use this as a starting point for this. We ended up at the same event. You got the gig, and then you referred me.
How did you get that gig, Eric?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for the referral.
Can you hear the facetiousness in his thank you? That was not a true. Still waiting for chocolates to be sent. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of rands here.
Didn't I buy you dinner?
Oh, yes. I remember the chicken wrap. Thank you so much, Eric. And only because I forced you to. Schnorrer. You call the Schnorrer in Yiddish.
So we were at this event together, and we had day one, you opened up the conference. It was like offsite. Day one, you opened it up. And day two, I brought us home. And afterwards, you know, it was quite cool because I know how you present. I've seen you present many times. I've listened to your keynotes many times. So I have a very good inclination. But it was nice sitting in the audience on that day and contrasting how we deliver our messages in different ways. And what was quite interesting was, so I picked up two things. One thing came from the audience. So the day when I finished, one of the ladies in the crowd came to me and said, "You guys make a very good combo because John comes in very high level vision stuff, and then you follow up and you ground us and you help us to take a lot of that and see how it applies into our practical sort of day-to-day lives." So that was quite nice to hear. And I think if you can have both, that's the best place to be. Because if you only have high level, people might feel like the ground has disappeared beneath them because they like there's all this change. What do I anchor myself into? But if you only have the grounding, then you also don't know where you are going. You don't feel inspired necessarily by a big vision. So I think the 1-2 combo works really well. And then from a more practical point of view, I also realized that we tell our stories in different ways, or we try and land our messages in different ways. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I don't know if you've seen me speak in a while, maybe just on
I was just going to say, I wasn't there, you know, I left by the time you were speaking. So I didn't see you talk.
But here's my assessment. My assessment is that your speaking style is show and tell, and mine is narrative driven. And so what I mean by that, and it actually shows in the amount of slides that we have as well. So when I look at your talk, you go like, like it's very quickly between different ideas. And what you're doing, it's like, it really is a kind of show and tell of what the future is going to be. That's what it felt like to me. And whereas when I think of the way that I try and convey my messages, I have many more long format stories. I'll talk about the race to the South Pole. I'll talk about studies that were done inside of AT&T, for example. So they're different styles, but they still both structured around wanting to land one specific message for an audience. What is your take on it? Like, do you feel show and tell is a good description of what you do?
To be honest with you, I've never even thought about it. I've never named it. I don't know how else to present, to be honest. I've never been to presenting school. So for me, it's like, how quickly can I explain to you how the future's coming, contextualize the absolute necessity for you to be catalyzed to change the way you think about how you think? That's kind of my mission. I've got an hour with you. I'm going to drib you for as hard as I can for the first 30 minutes, 35 minutes to really get you to feel uncomfortable. And then for the last 20 minutes, I want to bring you up into the tool sets that are required for the catalyst to actually start to take shape. And so, yes, it is a very high energy, very, and I loved what you said to me afterwards. I said, John, you have a confrontational style of speaking. And I laughed to myself because I realize I don't really even think of myself as confrontational, but when I do listen to the pod as well, and I've said this to you, when I listen to the pod and I listen to myself talk, I'm like, my first thoughts are, calm down, bro. Calm down, John. You don't need to be going so fast. Like, what's your hurry? What's going on? But so funny, because when I'm talking, I have no idea I'm going this pace. I'm talking because I've got a lot to tell you, and I've got to get you to understand why it's so important to think in new ways. And so, like, like the luxury of sitting there telling you long stories, I think I'm like, no. There's lots to get through. Yeah, I gotta get through it quickly. So, yes, totally different styles.
All right, so let's go through some of the points of how to deliver a good message then. And I think why I wanted to mention this at the front or at the start of this little section is it's what's made the pod like work. You know, is that we have different styles. We come at these things from different angles, and we've always heard that that's a good thing. So there's no right or wrong way to deliver a message. It's just like, has it landed for the people that you are trying to inspire or communicate with, or trying to get them to change the way they think? That's all that really matters.
Yes, and sometimes you and I walk off stage and we don't think it's landed, and then we miff, and then we're upset, and we're depressed, and we're irritated, and so there's a huge, huge emotional toil that happens when we don't feel the energy clicking, which doesn't happen that often, thank God, because we're successful. But I mean, I can just imagine if your keynote's not landing, my God, it's the longest 30 minutes of your life standing up there.
All right. So the very first point that I had here is you have to be very clear about what you are trying to communicate. And the reason is that you need to know where you are. What is the final destination? Because you are going to take people on an entire journey, but it still has to end somewhere. And unfortunately, I see many people trying to fold way too much in. They're trying to almost like just compact as many ideas as possible. But ultimately, there's no clear thread that runs through it. When I was doing my master's degree, they said to us that the most important thing that you're going to do is to find your golden thread. And that golden thread has to be weaved into every single aspect of your thesis. And if it's missing, it becomes so clear because all of a sudden you'll read something and it feels like, where does this fit in? Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, I had this beautiful through line that I was following and now it's gone. And even this morning, you know, when we were going through our book, one of the main focus points for us was, how do we make it more clear? How do we make it more sharp? And the only way that you get to do that is you have to align it around the outcome that you are trying to create. And that outcome could be a few different things. That outcome is going to be the specific message that you are trying to land, but it's also going to be the specific emotion that you are trying to elicit in your audience. And you can't do either of those if you aren't clear about what you are trying to communicate and who you are communicating that to.
It's so funny you start off with that. You're not going to read you what I wrote. Be clear in what you're trying to achieve. First point. Yeah. It's exactly, it's like, where are you ending this thing? Start off with that in mind. Explain the challenge. Explain where you want to end up. And what I usually say is, hopefully by the end of this talk, you would have built the ability to have optimism for uncertainty. That's ultimately what I want you to do. When you have optimism for uncertainty, you can win at any game whatsoever. But we don't realize that we are very pessimistic about uncertainty. And so, like, yes, that is always my starting point.
It's so good to, of getting it's it so going. Good to do that, because it also prompts people to think about, now that I know what the outcome is supposed to be, I can look for what I can pick up in the talk that's going to help me to do that. Whereas often you'll hear a talk where someone just kind of gets into it and I'm not quite sure even where we're going. You know, you haven't told me what the direction is.
Yeah.
And so now I'm like almost left to kind of figure it out. When you watch a series, you know, the first 10, 15, 20 minutes, it's often the part where people get lost. Like they get bored with the series, and it's because they didn't quickly enough establish what we are trying to accomplish. So what's your next one?
My second point is, start with an eagle's point of view. And I always like to contextualize, because not everybody's in your world. And I think that, and you know, in my presentation aspect, I had don'ts first. And the first thing I said, don't do, is go through the 8 things that make a good leader. Shut up. Shut up. Shut up. Here are 7 things I learned from climbing Mount Everest that will help your leadership teams. Shut up. Shut up. Shut up. Yeah, you're wasting my time already. And so making lists of the things you should do in some place or other place, you have already lost me, because I don't care about your list. What I want to know is the context in which you want to build the solution in. And when I said this now, just now, it's like, I spend a whole lot of time contextualizing. Like, I would think 2/3 of my presentation are context. It's like, the more context you have, the more you ambush your audience to believing what they need to believe to prepare for what's coming. So start from a contextual point of view once you've told them what to achieve. Almost like a Hollywood movie, you know, you start over the viewpoint of New York and then you come into the coffee shop.
Yeah. It's so funny, the 7 points of this and the 3 points of that. I think it's, you know, when they do that, it's such conditioning from how the internet has sort of evolved over the past few years, because listicles became all the rage and it seemed like a good way to convey information. And I think in some ways it is, but when you're on stage, I just don't think it brings the authority, and it doesn't. It almost shows to me a little bit of a lack of understanding, because you kind of dive straight into the points and you're not building that bigger context that you're speaking about.
No context. No context. Not what we're trying to achieve. And guess what? Everybody has access to those lists.
And that's a big part. It's just bland. It's just super bland.
Yeah.
The way that I build context, and number 2 for me, it's kind of the same to yours, is to name the problem. And this for me is really about two purposes here. One is that the moment you do that, you align with your audience. So they know that you know what they are dealing with. Because often, you know, if you listen to a very successful entrepreneur that's speaking to entrepreneurs that are just starting out, it's almost like they've forgotten what those initial challenges are, or the world even has changed since when they were, you know, starting up. And so you need to be able to align and say, I see you and I see what you are going through. But the second part of that is that it helps them to understand what we are here to solve. Because sometimes they can't even name that problem for themselves. Sometimes they haven't even seen the problem for themselves. And I always say, you have to be able to name it to tame it. So the moment we have the awareness, now you can do something about it. And so, for example, you know, a problem that I'm addressing in one of my talks is that we want to get people to change. But the way that we communicate change to them mostly comes from a fear-driven state of mind. And so what we'll say to people is that AI is going to take your job. But the problem is that if most people are in survival mode, what you are doing is you're just pouring fuel onto the fire. You're just pushing them deeper into survival mode. And so if I'm in a survival mode state of mind and you're trying to get me to change through fear, really all you're doing is you are positioning that change as a threat to me, because that's the only way I can perceive it when I'm in survival mode. And so now that you know this, okay, now that you know people are in survival mode, and now that you know that this fear-based messaging is going to make it worse, what do you do? Well, you need to find a way to be, you know, to speak about it in a more optimistic and possibility-based manner. So just that, even just that short bit, you know, like we've named the problem, you've seen why it is so, why it could be such a challenge for you. And now you really start thinking about the solution to that.
Love it. I love that. That's very, very smart. My next point is, don't be shy to take your audience on a roller coaster ride. It's important to take them down before you take them up. And I think both are important, because some speakers just leave them down. Like, I've seen some futurists scare the bejesus out of the audience and do nothing to help them. Like, I don't know what the point of that was. I was in Lima in Peru, and the editor of Wired magazine, London, opened the conference and I closed the conference. And his talk was only about all the latest technologies that are coming on, taking the jobs away. And that was it. Thank you very much. I was like, I said to the agent who booked both of us, I said, that was terrible, bro. That was terrible. The audience is not feeling inspired. The audience is now shocked. So shocked and awe. So end obviously well, but also when you're going through, here are eight things I learned about leadership, you're not taking an audience through a roller coaster of emotions that allow people to dive down, come up, go down, come up. And so I actually comment to my audience when I'm speaking, I'm like, I can feel how cold the energy is in the room, and that's okay. I need you to be here to realize why it's important to take the next step. So I'm going to end on a high. Don't worry. I'm going to end with tools on how, but let me explain to you what AI is doing. Let me explain to you what's happening. So I'm taking you down. And people laugh because they're like, okay, thank God, you know? And I remind them that every Hollywood movie has a downer before an upper, because if you don't have a downer, then you don't have any emotional turmoil, and you need emotional turmoil. So if you're telling them what you're doing, you're building context, now take them on a storytelling journey that always requires death before rebirth.
That's exactly why I think naming the problem, like, it fits into that category for me. Because we're trying to get you to look at the reality of where things are and then go, okay, well, here's the next step. Aaron Sorkin, who's a phenomenal screenwriter, said, I worship at the altar of intention and objection, intention and obstacle. So we are trying to get somewhere, but there's an obstacle. And you have to have that, because that creates drama, you know? So if it's just all plain sailing, there's no drama, excitement in it.
Yeah, here's my eight lists of being a leader.
Yeah, there's exactly. Nothing. Yeah. You have to have the, like, break up, and then you have to get together. Like, it has to be that emotional roller coaster. And I think you're very good at that, by the way. So
thank you.
The next one for me that I think ties into what you just said is to really think about cadence when you speak. I was watching a speaker the other day, and the entire thing, she's a very new speaker, but the entire thing felt to me like a lecture, you know, like it was just, here is an information dump of everything that I know about this topic. It was all technical. There was no interesting studies, examples, stories, but most of all, it was a talk that was about the emotional aspect of being a human, but it was devoid of any emotion. And to sit through that for 45 minutes is torturous, you know?
Torture.
Yeah.
Torture.
But I think this is a mistake that many rookie speakers do, is they just try and dump information. They think that I need to show you how smart I am instead of connecting to the audience. Comedians work on laughs per minute. You know, that's how they kind of gauge their success. Whereas I think when you become a speaker, what you're starting to aim for as well is you want to have insight and emotion as a cadence. You want to be able to kind of track insight, emotional up, emotional down. And that's why that cadence becomes important, not only the way that you speak, but in that journey that you take the audience on. There's that great, I want to quickly read it to you because I found it this morning, because cadence is the presentation of it. It's the emotional, like, overarching arc, but it's also the way that you present it, right? And there's this thing by Gary Provost, who's a poet, and he wrote this thing about how to use cadence. And so the first part, he says, this sentence has 5 words. Here are 5 more words. 5-word sentences are fine, but several together become monotonous. Listen to what is happening. The writing is getting boring. The sound of it drones. It's like a stuck record. The ear demands some variety. And then he does this variety thing. So now listen, I vary the sentence length and I create music. Music. The writing sings. It has a pleasant rhythm, a lift, a harmony. I use short sentences and I use sentences of medium length. And sometimes when I'm certain the reader is rested, I will engage him with a sentence of considerable length, a sentence that burns with energy and builds with all the impetus of crescendo, the roll of drums, the crash of the cymbals, sounds that say, listen to this, it is important. So write with a combination of short, medium, and long sentences. Create a sound that pleases the reader's ear. Don't just write words, write music. So good, hey?
Oh my God.
So good.
Wow, that was beautiful. My God.
Yeah, so good.
Wow. That was so good. Oh my God, that was so good on so many levels. Oh my God, that is, you need to have that in your house, yeah, you know, so in your next to your desk, you know, to read that. That's so good. My next point is very much linked to what you're saying is don't be condescending, be conversational. And, you know, it's you're taking the audience on a journey with you. You're not there knowing more than them. And maybe some audience members like to have this sort of like light at the beacon that's going to give you all the answers to your problems. But I, that's not my style. My style is very much, look, let me tell you what I've learned. Let me tell you what's helping me. Let me explain to you why I think this is maybe the most important thing we need to be focusing in on. And maybe the question you should be asking that's the most important. And it's very conversational. It's like, it's continuously conversational. And I think when you make it conversational, you naturally go through the rhythms that you're talking about and shorter and taller and shorter and taller, because you got this sort of symbiosis with the conversation of the audience that's happening back and forth. Whereas you're only going through lists, it's just long form, which is not giving you that personality that's required. And then when you are conversational, and I think really, really important is to be surprising to your audience. That's so, for me, you know, the surprise factor, the ability to tell your audience what they don't know in a surprising way, connecting the golden thread of subject matters that shouldn't be connected together but are connected together, are everything. That's what the audience remembers. That's what they go away with. That's what they laugh at. That's what they engage with. That's what they're emotional about. So be conversational, be surprising, and tell them something they don't know already. That's a really key factor for me.
So my next point is find good stories. And I think this is really important when, especially when you have my style of presenting, is that you don't want to find stories that are cliche. Well, I guess it's across the board. Like, you don't want to find things that everyone knows already. I guess it actually ties in very nicely to your previous point. Because very often, the way that we will tell stories is we'll find the things that are sort of common knowledge already. You know, they're amazing stories. Like, it's about companies that have done great things or leaders that have done great things, but everyone already knows it. And so, to your point, there's no surprise and delight there. And also, it's just not relatable. You know, like if you tell me a story about Microsoft, mostly like I'm not a $1 trillion company. I don't have tens of thousands of employees. Yeah. Like it's very difficult for me to see myself in that story. So what I'm doing is we both do this really, is that we are always in gathering mode. You know, we are always looking for what is a story that tells and communicates something important to the audience. What is that story that is non-obvious? What is that story that is kind of hidden somewhere that people don't really talk about, but there's such like golden nuggets in it? And when I look at a story, the way that I evaluate it is really through three criteria. One is that I want it to be interesting. Number two is that I want it to be not common. And number three is I want a very strong emotional imbuement in it, like a very strong emotional charge, or I want a very strong hook, meaning like something that's smart that is being said in the story. And so two examples of this from my keynote that I often talk about is I talk about the story of one of my clients that for years struggled to be more like consistent in the gym. And he just couldn't figure it out. Like he would always say, it's a time management issue. It's a time management issue. I can't get the gym. And then eventually, like, you know, he was in coaching sessions with me. Eventually what we figured out is that the reason he wasn't going to the gym is because the moment he stepped into the gym, he felt guilty for the fact that he was away from the office, that he wasn't with his employees, that he wasn't being productive, that he wasn't doing the work. That when he grew up, after school, he didn't go and play sports. He went to go work in his father's shop. Over weekends, he didn't go and hang out with his friends. He went to go work in his father's shop. And so actually, his entire identity was built around the work that he had done. And it was only once he realized that that was the thing that prevented him, the subconscious emotion created the discomfort that pushed him out of the gym. It wasn't time. Only once he had that realization could he start making some real changes. And people relate to that because so many people go through this process of wanting to be more successful or want to get to the gym more often or whatever, and not realizing that there are certain things that drive us subconsciously. And now I can look for it because now I can put myself in that story. That is a very relatable story. A story that I tell that almost doesn't pass the test is the story about the Olympics team, like the cycling team that went through this whole process of, I'm shortcutting it a lot here because I don't want to go through the entire story, but they had this new manager comes like in, the team didn't do well for about 100 years, the British cycling team. And then because this new manager steps in, all of a sudden they start improving a lot because they go through this process of the aggregation of marginal gains. So they look at every athlete, they broke them down into components. They try and improve everything by just 1%, knowing that ultimately it helps the team at a high level than the athlete to be much, much better if you can make these small improvements. And so it demonstrates a principle again, you know, accretion. It demonstrates this power, the power of tiny gains and compounding. But it's a cool story. It doesn't have as strong of an emotional hook. It's actually quite well known. But I keep it in because people still go, wow. Like they still look at it and they go, like but you can feel the difference in the story, right? That's actually what I'm just trying to get at in a very rushed kind of way.
Yeah, no, I get it. I agree with you. And I think both are good for specific reasons. I think the iteration one, it gives you an ability to actually do something that says, if I just do 1 degree, it's more than enough. You know, it's like, okay, that's, you know, it's manageable. It's bite-sized. My last point
Can I ask you a question quickly before you get to your last point? Something I noticed with your keynote, which I found interesting, was that you don't really share any personal stories in your keynotes. What is the reason for that?
I don't know. It's a good question. I used to share a lot. And lots of people have asked me about my bankruptcy and like that sort of thing. And I just thought, you know, I did them in some talks. I don't think they're relevant in the talks that I'm giving now because I'm talking about neuroscience. And for me to talk about the way I meditate and what's happened to me, I think is like, it's good for Q&A. I don't actually bring them into the keynote itself. And also, look, I mean, I'm talking to audiences, such varied audiences around the world. I don't think they care about me. They care about the stories that relate to their businesses and localized it, you know, in a way of strategy rather than personal. So I don't know. I think it's a good question. I haven't really thought about that, you know. I do comment I do make chirps throughout my talks about my personal life, but not really anything that's standard that's put in there.
I thought there's a place for connection that can be built there because you have such great stories as well. And I do think there are lots of ways of tying it in that makes it very relevant for any audience because like they're connecting to you. Anyway, I was just curious.
No, it's a good point. It's a good point. So look, my last point is when somebody messages me, and I get it quite often, is can you give me any tips about speaking? And my only tip is be incredibly passionate about what you're speaking about. If you're not, don't do it. Oh no, but I got to do something for work. And then, if you're not passionate about what you're working on, your presentation is going to be shit because then it's copy and paste. It's going through it's selling something that you don't really believe in. And people are like, is that your only answer to be passionate about what I'm talking about? I tell you, let me ask you something. What do you absolutely love doing? Well, I love gardening. Okay. Talk to me about gardening. Okay. And I can talk forever. Exactly. I'm like, well, there you go. Talk to me about the sales track of your new Oracle cloud. Like, oh no, I'm bored already. Well, then you're not passionate about what you're doing. You know what I mean? No offense to Oracle. I'm speaking for them soon. So I like you all, Oracle. So you're just top of mind. That's why I brought you up. So you've got to really be passionate about what you're talking about. And then what happens is that you can relax on stage and you can relax in the presentation. When you're too heady, too trying to prove yourself, not truly fascinated and passionate about your topic, it's so felt by the audience. And the audience just switches off and you can see it. And thank God it doesn't happen to me, but I see people doing talks and then half the audience on their phones. I mean, that is just a kick in the teeth, man.
I remember when I was growing up, my grandfather used to tell us stories all the time. And it was like one of the highlights for me when we went to go and visit him, and he stayed in Cape Town, is that his house had this sort of like built-on section. And at night we would go and chill there with him and he'd tell us these stories. And I think the reason why it's still etched into my memory till today is because he loved telling those stories, you know, and he even recorded them for us on tapes, like cassettes back in the day for all the Gen Zers. You might not know what it is. Just go and Google it. But he used to...
No, not Gen Zers, Gen Ys. No. Gen Zers, no. No, Gen Zers don't.
Way post their time.
Shit, man. No. Gen X, sorry. Sorry, I thought you were talking about Gen X.
He recorded them for us and I would actually listen to them at home as well on like radio at night or my Walkman. Again, go and Google it. But I think what made it special was that, you know, he loved telling it and he cared a lot about who he was telling it to. And if you can just nail those things, like a lot of the other things start taking care of themselves. I think if I look at my journey over the years, what has definitely happened for me is that I care a lot more about connecting with the audience rather than educating them. And that was when I initially just wanted to be smart on stage and I just wanted to share everything that I'm learning. But it was actually more about me being on stage, being smart versus me getting on stage to connect to people who are going on a journey. And it's a shared journey that we are on. And I'm here to help you kind of think through this and help you see it in a different kind of way.
That's very wise.
And so that's, in my opinion, why maybe the last year and a half, I'm in my confidence era when I get on stage. Like I know when I get on stage, I'm going to deliver for a client. And I'm not saying that from an arrogant point of view. I'm saying it purely because my purpose there is to connect to the audience. And since I've been doing that, the response has been vastly different.
Very good. I really like that. That's such a great intention. That's different, you know? Well, look, I'm only doing it to make cash, so I don't give a shit what anybody's saying, you know what I mean?
Thank you. Thank you for the honesty there.
Just kidding, Sonny. Well, look, it's been a great episode and it's been a hell of a long one, but I think we got through a lot and wonderful to be back. And thank you everybody for joining us. If you've gotten to this part of the podcast, thank you, Superfan. really great to have you along. And we're looking forward to next week's pod because next week will be brand new and it'll be a brand new format. So we're excited to be delivering that. And so thank you for joining us. Eric, you're going to sign us up?
Yeah, listen, as always, what a pleasure. I've really missed this. It's felt to me like ages since we've done this. So it's been really good to be back in the podcast seat. to be jamming with you on the pod, to be thinking about new ways that we'll be bringing some of these messages across to the audience. On the pod, also the reason why we keep iterating and the reason we keep thinking about new ways of doing things is because of everyone listening. Because we really do appreciate your time that you spend with us, because we know that you have thousands of other options to listen to, millions. And so we love that you choose to spend your time with us. We treat it as sacred time, and we want to make sure that we bring you the most value per minute that you can find on any pod. So please make sure to check out for the new pod coming next week. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, all the podcast platforms. And of course, the book is coming out soon, so pre-orders will be available. But until then, we'll catch you again next week. As always, be expansive. Ciao.
Ciao.